Okay, we're holding on Memheo Mabez, five lines from the bottom. We've been talking about several different cases involving where a woman, where a girl rather, Katana, is niskadish without her father's das. Yesterday, actually, we talked about, we talked about a couple of cases where the kiddushin were with her father's das, but afterwards the nisuin were not. And then with the last one, actually, we had, okay, so another case. Niskadish shaloi l'das aviyah. What if you have a girl who was niskadish without her father's das? V'nisis shaloi l'das aviyah. V'nisis shaloi l'das. She was also married. The nisuin also
took place. That the family took the money? Or that she did it mamash as a young girl?
There's actually different opinions among the Rishonim in that itself. Does it mean, is she able to take the money on her own, or does it mean that somebody else accepted it on her behalf? Yeah.
Okay, so
the point is that her father was not the one who accepted Kiddushin on her behalf.
Okay.
Had he been, then of course it would be a valid Kiddushin, for sure. She was Niskadish without his knowledge. The Nisus Shalom the Das. She was also, the Nisurin took place again.
According to the Russian, she can be Nisus without the Das Aviyah.
Right, but again, does Niskadish mean that she was Niskadish just on her own? She went and accepted the Kiddushin on her own? Or does it mean that some elder member of her family had to accept it on her behalf? Okay. V'nisus shaloi l'das aviyah. She was married again without her father's das. V'aviha kan. Now, in this case, her father is in town, unlike previous cases that we talked about where he was in Medinat Hayam. So, we discussed yesterday the issue. If she's marrying a kohen, is she at this point, after these nisuin, where there is always the possibility that the father may not end up agreeing to the kedushin and the nisuin, it may end up that this is not a valid marriage to a kohen. So we discussed yesterday the pros and cons of whether she can eat truma. So in this case, Rav Huna Amar Echelas, Rav Huna says she can eat truma on the basis of this. Rav Huna says that she can eat truma on the basis of this on the basis of this nisuin. Rav Yirmi Yababa Amar Ein Echelas, and Rav Yirmi Yababa says that she can't. So Amar Ula, so Ula's point. Ula says, Hod Rav Huna, this din of Rav Huna is very, very hard to understand. It's kachoymet l'shinayim, but he used an expression from Pasuk, kachoymet l'shinayim, v'cha'asham l'inayim. It's like vinegar to the teeth and like smoke to the eyes. Which both are, the vinegar is bad for your teeth. The smoke is bad for your eyes. It's very difficult to understand how Rav Huna can be saying what he's saying. Umahos, Madach, in the previous case that we had yesterday, where she was niskadish with her father's das and married without her father's das, the kedusha deraisa, the kedushin themselves are valid on a deraisa level. Amrit lo achla, and yet Rav Huna said in that case that she can't eat truma. How much more so over here, where even the kedushin is not valid deraisa? What logic could you possibly say that she should be allowed to eat truma in this case? Therefore, nirin divrei Talmud, it seems more logical to say according to the Talmud, namely Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba was a Talmud of Rav Huna. Tosfos, by the way, points out there seem to have been two Rabbi Yirmi Ba'abas in Shas. There was an elder Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba who was a Talmud Chover, a colleague slash Talmud of Rav, and then there was this Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba who was a Talmud of Rav Huna, which puts in two generations later.
No, so
obviously here we're talking about that one because it says we're saying near and dear Talmud. But Tosfos points out there are other Gemaras where we hear of a Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba who is a contemporary of Rav Huna or maybe even older than him. Omar Rava, however, Rava says, my time is Rav Huna. However, I can explain Rav Huna's reason. The reason is, the difference is, Hoyo Vanasava Maiti Yisema B'chaya Av. Because in the previous case where the Kedushin happened with his daf, means therefore that she's still being treated as a Tana, where the father is the one who has the ability to be Makadisher. So then we can say that the Nisuin were done without his daf, he may still object to it, and therefore we can't allow her to eat truma. Here what we're saying is the Kedushin themselves happened without his daf. Now he's in town. He didn't say anything about it. We're obviously not talking about over here that he objected, because if he objected, there's nothing to talk about. He didn't say anything. So, okay, we discussed at the very end of the Gemara yesterday, maybe him not saying anything means he's angry, but still, that it went so far as Nisuin means it must mean, Rashi says, that he was choisic. He didn't say anything, so either he doesn't object, or maybe even he's voluntarily giving up any schus that the, any no, he may well be upset, but the fact that he's still being quiet all this time means that either he agrees to it, either shtika kaida, or he was maskir the schus that he had that he had to marry her off. He's not gonna be quiet all the way through the nisur.
What's the difference between this case and the previous case?
That's the difference, Rava is saying. The difference is that in the previous case she was niskadish with his das. So now, when it comes to the Nisurin, where she's also supposed to check with him before she sets the date for the Nisurin and whatever, and she didn't, he may be angry. Doesn't mean he agrees to the Nisurin. We have to, we discussed at the very end, we said that Rabbi Yirmi of Abba would say that the fact that he's quiet means that he tacitly agrees to it, and Rav Huna says that, and Rav Huna says that no, he's angry, and therefore you can't assume that he consents. Here, though, where even the Kedushin was done without his das, already at this point, if he objected to the thing, he would have said something by now.
If both were done
without the das, they're only the Nisur. Yeah.
It's not the case that he shows married already in the second part, right?
They're learning. Yes, Avraham Moshe, they're learning also. Yes, you can. Come on. Seriously. They're not being mild.
It's not fair.
Yeah. Relax, Avraham Moshe. They're learning. Let them learn in peace. Let us learn in peace. I don't see how they're. You can hear. Come on. I'm right next to you. She acted as if she was Yisem. Not she's literally Yisem of Chayav. She wasn't literally married before. She was, and there'd be nothing to talk about. Obviously, the father can't be Makadosh. There's nothing to talk about whether in this case, because she received Kedushin without a doubt, and the Nisurin, it's as if she was Yisem of Chayav. Now, the father seems to have waived his right to be Makadosh in the future. Okay. Whether the halacha is like Rav Huna or like Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba is a whole other question. On the one hand, the Gemara is saying near and zirei Talmud. On the other hand, Rava does for end for Rav Huna. There's also on top of that, there's a good deal of discussion. This whole machlokas of Rav Huna and Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba, is it following the same, we had before the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel versus Ravina, whether if the father didn't agree to the Kedushin, whether we have to be concerned that afterwards he agreed to it or not, where Rav and Shmuel have said yes, and therefore she needs a guess in Miyun, and then Ravina had said we don't have to worry about it. So is this Machlokas recapitulating that one, or is it a different one? Because you could also argue that those Machlokas are talking about Shidduch and Lo Shidduch, whereas ours is not. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's another variable.
Okay, another case. Itma. Ktana shniskadsha shaloy l'das aviyah. If a ktana was niskadish without her father's das, Omer Rav, bein hi uvein aviyah yechoyim la'akid. Afterwards, since at the time the father did not agree to it, if she wants to change her mind before her father agrees, she's able to. So her father can object to it, and the kedushin on akal. She herself can also object to it afterwards before her father agrees. Tosfos discusses. I mean, why does her das matter according to Rav? We know the father has the ability to be mekadosh her even without her das. The Tosfos answers that's the difference. If her father is mekadosh her without her input at all, fine. The Torah gives him that zchus. In this case, where it originally involved her input, she herself was mekabel kedushin on her own behalf or whatever. Somebody else was mekadosh it accepted on her behalf, whatever. Rav is saying you need her das as well. And if she changes her mind, she has the ability to. Because we can say that if he had known that she was going to object, he wouldn't agree to it either.
Wait a minute. We're saying if he doesn't know, she can.
As long as he hasn't accepted, she can change her mind. Yeah. The minute he knows and accepts. Actually, the truth is, Rashi doesn't seem to say like that. Rashi seems to say that even after he accepts, she can change his mind, which of course leads to the question, so when would it ever be a valid kedushin? The basic answer is that, according to the Mepharshim explained, that according to Rashi, she can change her, if her father accepts, but she doesn't know yet that he accepted, then she can still change her mind. Once you have a point where he accepted the kedushin, and she knows about it, and also accepted, then that's it, it's final. Yeah. But according to Rashi, as long as she doesn't know that her father accepted, she'd still have the ability to withdraw. Tosfos would say that once the father accepts, that's it, it's out of her hands.
Regardless if she knows or not.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is, Rav is saying that it, up until that point, either she or her father can be ma'akir. Ravasi says, no, only her father is able to prevent it from happening by objecting. She's not. Okay. So Rav Huna asked Rav Ashi a stira, or some say that Chia bar Rav. So it's either Rav Huna who is Rav's Talmud, or it's Chia who is Rav's son, asked Rav Ashi. We learned in Ksubas about the concept of Oynas and Mafate, and in particular we're going to focus here on Mafate, where a man seduces a girl to be Mizana with him. Then we say that he's obligated to, there's a choice. Either he marries her, and then he's pulled her from anything, or if she or her father don't agree, as we'll say now, then instead he pays a knas.
What do you mean they don't agree?
If her father doesn't want to marry her off to him, or she doesn't want to marry him, then he pays a knas. As opposed to onus, where he has to marry her and pay a knas. Here it's one or the other. So the pasuk says, "Imoin yimoin oviyah." If her father refuses, only Elavia. So based on that, you'd only know that her father has the ability to refuse. He asked me 9. How do we know that she has the ability to refuse also? Therefore, the double lashon ma'in yimoin, implying that there's two possible refusals: her father's and hers.
That's a
possibility. Well, the possibility is in mind. The Braise says that the Braise, which is from Mechilta, and on that parasha, is darshaning the double expression moin yimoin to mean that either she or her father can refuse, and then the guy has to pay the knack. So the point of the matter is, we see that she has the ability to prevent prevent him from marrying her. So Bechora, you see that she has that ability. So what are you, Rav Asi, telling us that she doesn't? That only the father does. Amalahu Rav. So Rav tells Rav Huna or Chia, he tells them, "Loitezlo bosa ipcha." Don't go after ipcha. Ipcha literally means the reverse. So Rashi says ipcha means davar she'eino, something that's not correct. Don't bosa ipcha literally means after the reverse. Basically Rashi explains that you're asking a preposterous question, because Rav Asi can easily refute that. There are other mafarshim who explain that basu ipcha means, actually Rashi himself explains in some other places, that the expression loteis for basu ipcha means don't try to ask a question from a braisa that can easily be understood the other way around. It can easily be understood the opposite of the way you explain it. Because yochal shenuya lachu, because Rav Asi could very well answer to you, you're assuming that the guy was mafata her, that he wants to marry her. That he originally, when he seduced her, was l'shem ishus. I want to seduce you to be niskadish b'biya to me, let's say, and then afterwards we'll get married. Could be that he's mafata her just summers as for a one night stand. Shaloi l'shem ishus, just for no. So then in that case, it's not relevant. Well, that's the question. Pita l'shem ishus, shaloi l'shem ishus, kraboi. So you need a pasuk to tell us that in that case,
exactly.
that her father or she can be ma'akev, of course. And why would we?
Obvious. We don't need a pasuk to tell
us. That's the question. If you say it's l'shem ishurus, that he meant it l'shem kedur, that he meant it to do kedur should be a, yeah. But if Rav is saying you can easily, yeah, that's exactly the question. Rav Nachman Yitzchak answers, okay, Rashash takes that by Yitzchak, because we're dealing two generations before Rav Nachman Yitzchak. We're dealing in the time of Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov, who was Rav Nachman Stam and Shas. Anyway, okay. So he answers, no. Loima Shemashalim Knas Mamafuta. No, the Chiddush of the Braisa, or the Chiddush of the Pasuk, rather, is not that in the case of Znus that she or her father can refuse. That's obvious. The Chiddush is that in that case, if she doesn't want to marry him, he has to pay the Knas. You would think, in other words, the pasuk is only saying in aviha.
Only if she's the owner, she pays the knas.
Right. But you would think, like this one, the pasuk says in aviha. If her father refuses, so you would think only if the father refuses, then he has to pay the knas. You would think if the father is willing for him to marry her, and just she's refusing, you would think maybe he's pater from the knas. That is what the pasuk has to tell us by moin yimoin, that yes, it was the shame's nus, of course. Nevertheless, just as much as her father has the ability to refuse, and then he has to pay the knas, so does she have the ability to refuse, and then he and make him pay the knas, right? Right. Yosef tells him, if so, Heiner the Tanena, Heiner the Tanena means this is what we learned. Now, usually the expression in Shas, Ihochi Heiner the Tanena, introduces a question. Ihochi, if you're going to say like that, Heiner the Tanena, what are you going to do with what it says in such and such a paraisa? Here, though, Rashi says that it means, and Rashi and Tosfos both say that it's benichusa. It's not a challenge, it's rather a statement. It's rather a statement supporting what you just said. Benichusa means calmly. So not as an objection, but rather as a supporting statement. Yeah. If so, Heiner the Tanena, then that makes sense. What we learn in the Braisa, that the pasuk says Moho Yumharena Loyla Isha, that the same Braisa continues, that when the pasuk says Moho Yumharena Loyla Isha, that he has to give a Moihar, he has to write a ksuba and take him for himself as a wife. I mean Shitsucha Himenu Kedushin. That comes to teach us that she needs kedushin from him. So of course, then that means that the original pitri must have been for znus, because being pitri l'shum ishus kedushin lamali. Because after all, if he was mafata her as ishus, if he meant the bia l'shem kedushin, then what do you need another kedushin for? So obviously, therefore, Rabbi Yosef says, okay, now what you Rabbi Nachman are saying that the chiddush is that once she refuses, at that point that triggers him having to pay the knas. Then yes, that fits very well with the next part of the braisa.
Unless he gives a kiddushin.
The pasuk is telling us, we learn actually two things. Mohu yimarana loyla isha means that if he's going to marry her, he has to write a ksuba. This is actually one of the sources, we learned at the end of ksuba, the machlokas, where the ksuba is deraisa or derabanan. This is one of the sources that's used maybe to prove that a ksuba is deraisa. So the mohiha means kiddushin. No, it means ksuba. Mohu yimarana, he should provide a mohiha, means ksuba. Morhau literally means a bride price. You find, for example, in Vayishlach after Shechem waits dinner when he and his father Chamor go to discuss with Yaakov and his son, he says, "How will I earn Morhau Ramata? Make me pay as much Morhau as necessary, but I want to marry her." So the Morhau basically is
not enough.
No, Mohu Yumara, that's the thing. If he marries her, if Mohu Yumara Loyla Isha, then there's no knack. He marries her. He writes her out a normal ksuba, like he would write for a ksuba. The 200 zuz that he owes her for the ksuba is the same amount that he would have to pay for the knack. So that's it. Then there's no further knack. But here, the Gemara is explaining, though, that here the Braita is explaining that Mohu Yumara has a different meaning. It also means that he has to actually give money or shtar for kedushin. He has to do a proper kedushin. So now, if we said that the original pitri, the original relations with her were l'shem znus, sure, there was never any intent of kedushin. So now, in order for him to marry her, there needs to be kedushin. So Rav Yosef is saying that proves that the braisa must be talking about a case of pitri l'shem znus and not pitri l'shem ish. However, no, if he did it l'shem znus, then there was no kedushin. Now, if he wants to marry her, he has to give her kedushin. That's what the braisa is saying. If he had been mafater who l'shem kedushin, that he meant that this should be a bia, l'shem kedushin, then why is the bride saying you need another kedushin? That's Rabbi Yosef's point. Amalei Abaya, however, Abaya answers him, no. Maybe what the Braisa, you can't necessarily prove from that, because maybe what the Braisa means is tzricha kedushin l'das avia. No, maybe what it means is actually that she needs a new kedushin with the das of her father. Because the previous, even if you're going to argue that he did the pituri, the bia, l'shem kedushin, but that wasn't with her father's das. So now you would need another one. Tosfos mentions the possibility that actually Tosfos brings another girsa that going back a couple of lines that the Ela Amar of Nachman Yitzchok. The girsa that we have is Amar of Nachman Yitzchok, that Rav Nachman Yitzchok is explaining what Rav Asi said, and then Rav Yosef is now finding a braisa that supports what he's saying. Tosfos brings another gears, which is that Rav Nachman says Ella Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, that he's changing, that the father does have the ability to object, but The question on Ravasi is that the question on Ravasi was that the Braita seems to be implying that she could object. So what is Ravasi telling us that she can't? Ella Omer Rav Nachman Yitzchok said no. Rav Nachman Yitzchok rather comes to tell us that the Braita is telling us something different. The Braita is not getting into who can be objecting. The Braita is just saying you should know that any time the father objects, he has to pay the knas, and the same thing in this case if she objects. You can't necessarily say anything that has anything to do with what Ravasi is saying. And then on that, Rabbi Yosef is actually asking a question. The Ihochi, according to this, is a question like it usually is in chat. Ihochi, so then how are you explaining the Braisa that you need Kiddushin? If you're understanding the Braisa to say that there was already a form of Kiddushin, and Abaya tells him, but you need Kiddushin Madasabiya. Mishnah says, if a man says to a woman, be niskadish to me with this date, and he gives her a date, then he continues, be niskadish to me with this date. So neither one counts in combination with the other one. If at least one of them is worth a shavuot, then she is mekodesh, and if not, then she's not mekodesh, because each one is independent of the other. Now, okay, technically, we learned in the first parak that even if one of them is not worth a shavah prota, we learned Shmuel said she might be mekodesh misafek, because it might be worth a prota in madai. And Mepharshim say, actually, that's why the Mishnah uses the example of dates. The Rambam had said, you remember, we learned then, that if the thing is something that won't make it intact to madai, then the kedushin attack and not chal, because there's no way it's not worth a prota here, and it won't be worth a prota there either. That's why that would be why the Mishnah is mentioning dates, which we'll keep for a while. On the other hand, if he says bazoo u bazoo u bazoo, but if he says be niskadish to me with this and with this and with this, im yesh shava pruta bekulam, then if there's a shava pruta all together between all of them mekudeshes, the imlav ain't mekudeshes, and if not, then she's not mekudesh, because then all of them combine together for the kedushin.
Imlav meaning what?
Imlav meaning meaning if all of them together put together are not worth a prutah, then ain't a mekudeshes. Well, not mekudesh vaday. Again, there's still kedushis up. On the side over here, it mentions the possibility that instead of bazoo uvazoo uvazoo, maybe instead of the vav, it should be without the vav. Bazoo bazoo bazoo. Because as Gemara is going to talk about briefly, we mentioned it the other day. You have a three way machlokas in connection with this in Hilchos Shavuos. Whether you need vavs in order to combine it all together, or whether without vavs it means disjoint, etc. What if she was eating one date at a time? Now, which of the two cases in the Mishnah this is talking about, the Gemara is going to discuss. But she was eating one date at a time. Then she's not mekudesh unless one of them is worth a shavah prota. So the Gemara starts off, man tana hiskadshi hiskadshi. Which tana is it that says that you need to say hiskadshi each time for it to be considered a separate statement? And otherwise, if you were to say hiskadshali bazoo or bazoo or bazoo, it would be valid. Or even bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. Amar Rabbi Rav Shimon. That is the opinion of Rav Shimon. The case that we had the other day where several people take somebody to Beis Din and say, you owe me money, you owe me a pekodin or what have you, and he says, a shvur that I don't owe to you, a shvur that I don't owe to you, a shvur that I don't owe to you. Rav Shimon says that's the only case where you would be chayv a shvur, a korban shvur, an asham gzeilus individually for each one. Otherwise, you'd only be chayv. Otherwise, if he were to say, a shvur that I'm not chayv to you, let alone if he said to you and to you and to you, where the ands tie it all together.
Instead of saying to you or to you?
No. In other words, according to Rav Shimon, the only way for him to be chayv a separate korban for each one, if he says, a shvur I don't owe you, a shvur I don't owe you, a shvur I don't owe you. But if he were to say, a shvur I don't owe you, and you, and you, or shvur I don't owe you, 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 then he would only be chayv for one korban. Yeah, we talked about there was a three-way machlokes over there, the mayor of Yehuda and Rav Shimon, about that, what's considered klal and what's considered prat for that purpose. The Or Mishnah that's saying that only if you say hiskadshi individually, do we count each one separately? That would be according to Rav Shimon. According to Yehuda or according to Rav Meir, you would have other examples also. If you were to say, for example, hiskadshi bazoo, 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 then we might consider that also to be separate statements, and each one would have to, and when one of them would have to be a shavah prota. We said bazoo 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 yesh kolam shavah prota. We said that the Mishnah had finished off the case that if she's eating them one at a time, then she's only mekodesh if one of them is worth a shavah prota. So we have to ask Ahaya, which part of the Braita, which part of the Mishnah, rather, is that case referring to? Ilam Ar-Resha, is it referring to the Resha, where he said Iskadshi individually for each one? So who cares whether she's eating? So even if she doesn't eat them, she puts them all on the table in front of her. But each one was given as a separate act of kiddushin. Each one, he said, iskadshi individually. Yes, unless you have one. We already said in the Mishnah that unless one of them is worth a shavah krota, then no good. There's no kiddushin over here. So who doesn't matter whether she's eating them or not. Ela seifa. So you're going to say that it refers to the Sefer, the case where he says, bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. He says that being a Scottish to me with this, where we said that then we look at the value of all of them together to determine the Shavuot Kota. The problem with that is, Rafila Bakamaisa, are you telling me then that even if the fruit, let's say, for example, so he gave her, let's say, 3 dates. She gives her the first one, she eats it. And let's say that one was worth a Shavuot Kota. He gives her a second one. He starts out by saying, Iskadshli bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. And he gives her 3 dates. He gives her the first one, she eats it. He gives her the second one, she eats it. And then we only have the third one left. Are you telling me that even if the third one is not worth a Shavuot Kota, as long as the first or the second one was worth a Shavuot Kota, then it's Mekudeshes? If he says bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. Yes, so we would think he means all three of them together. The problem is that she's eating them. So you never have, by the time the kiddushin is finished, when he said it's gadshli bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. By the time he finished giving them, that's what we're asking over here on the face of it. Let's say that each of the first two was worth a shavuot kota. Fine. But the last one is not. She ate the first two by the time the third one is given. Therefore, at the time that the kiddushin is finished, at the time that the act of kiddushin is finished, there isn't a shavuot kota over here. Vahamilvahu. What you have over here is this is Vahamilvahi. This is a case of trying to be Mekadosh with a milva. Effectively, what you have is that he lent her the first two. She ate them. She's now responsible to pay them back. All you have now is the third one. The third one's not worth a prutah.
Why he lent her the first two?
Because since the Kiddushin was not fully accomplished with those two yet, and she already ate them, they're not present. Right? He said bazoo, 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 yeah. But since she ate the first two, we don't have them in front of us right now,
right.
Then it means that the first two that he gave her did not accomplish kiddushin.
Right.
So therefore, she owes him back those two.
It was given the Torah's kiddushin.
Fine, but and Tosfos asks about that. Tosfos asks from a case later on in the Masechta where a man is Mekadosh a woman and says the kiddushin should only be chal after 30 days. Then it's fine, even if the money is used up during the 30 days, the kiddushin are still chal then. So Tosfos says the difference is that over there you said one whole statement of kiddushin. That statement was all done before the money was spent. Statement is not done because you said bazoo, 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 and until you finish all the zoos, the kiddushin is not finished. So she's eating them as you go along. Then it means that the first two have to be considered a milva. They can't be considered as part of Torah's kiddushin. Before he said the last one, yeah.
She eats quickly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
She eats very, very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
She could swallow. Just put it in her mouth.
Come on, no. Okay.
It's true. Okay.
So the problem is you have a milva over here. We know that I'm a kaddish with milva and I'm a kodesh, as we learned in the first paragraph. If you're a kaddish with a loan, nothing doing because no object of value is changing hands right now. Omer Rabbi Yechanan says, you're right, we have a problem. Imagine, it's like we have a table, we have the meat, we have a knife, everything is all prepared for us. We don't have what to eat. We have a mission of very clearly stating the cases, but we don't know how to understand it. Rav Shmuel Amri Tavayo, whereas Rav and Shmuel both answered, no, La'olam HaReisha. Actually, this case about the eating is referring back to the Reisha. What the Mishnah is telling us, a more obvious case and a less obvious case. Lo'y Miboya Manacha, needless to say, if she put them all on the table in front of her, so then yes, if all 3 dates together are worth a Shavuot Kota, then good, and if not, then not. Aval Echelas, but if she's eating them, you would think, since she had a much closer hana, she shows, like you just said, Yaakov, she shows by this that she really likes what he's giving her. She's eating it right there on the spot. She's having hana from it right away. Emra Gamro Mikni Anakshi. You would think that maybe she's willing to be Makna herself with that. Kamash Malon, that's the Chiddush that no, you have to have a Shava Pruta available there at any one time. Therefore, in the first case, she put them all on the table. If there's not a Shava Pruta, nothing to talk about. But even in the last case, even though maybe the ones that she already ate combined with the one on the table are worth a Pruta, but no good because they were already. Okay, Tosfos Yishanim on the bottom points out over here that that she doesn't really have the ability to be machna herself with less than a pruta anyhow. We said earlier in the Masechta, pruta is the minimum even if she's willing to accept less. But okay, the Gemara when the Gemara wants to show why something is necessary in the Mishnah, it can use something even something not you know even something in bakal like this. Tosfos says that, you know something very very it's easy to find a tzrichas there. In other words, it's easy. The Gemara just wants to find some reason why the Mishnah has to say this, even though it's true. If you were to think into it, you might not really need it. You want to say? Okay. All right. Okay. Rab Ami says, here's a different answer. La'olam ha-sefer. No, actually, we can say that the case of the eating is talking about the sefer. U'may ad she'ehe ba'achas men shavar pruta. So what does it mean that one of them has to be worth a shavar pruta? It doesn't just mean any one of them like we were assuming up until now. It means ad she'ehe ba'achroina shavar pruta. Davka, the last one, has to be worth a pruta. Because that's exactly it. Because the previous ones would be considered a milva, and a kaddish for milva is no good. In that case, you can deduce three dinim from what Rav Ami is saying. Number one, Shmamina Hamakadish Milva Enim Kodeshis. You can prove that being Makadish with a Milva is no good. Rashi says, because after all, Rav Ami is accepting the premise of the question that it is a Milva. And other Mephoshim say that actually you don't even need that. Just Rav Ami is saying that the first two don't count. Why? Because they're a Milva. So therefore, you see from that in fact, being Makadish with a Milva is no good.
Because the last one was...
Because you only look at the last one, and if the last one's not worth a pruta, then you got nothing. Right? Well, Shmami na Hamakadosh Milva pruta daita pruta. Number two, you can prove from what Rav Ami is saying that if you're Makadosh with a Milva plus an extra pruta, then we can say that she, or he, there's different Gersois, have in mind the pruta, not the Milva, which actually we had earlier in the Masechta, we talked about that briefly. Later on Memchesta Mabez, we're going to have that Machlokas again. Historically, it came up in a famous thing in Jewish history that it was part of the argument between David and Shaul over the validity of David's Kedushin to Michal. So the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin in some detail over there that Shaul owed David money from beforehand because he had promised to give money to whoever killed Goliath, and he hadn't paid that off yet. But David wanted to use that for Kedushin to be Makadosh Shaul's older daughter, Merav, but that doesn't work because Makadosh Milva ended up Kedushin, so Merav ended up marrying somebody else. Then he tried again with Michal, but this time, besides the milva, which, okay, he knows already that doesn't work, Shaul tells him, if you bring back 100 orlos of plishtim, then you can marry Michal. And he brings back 200 in the end. So one possibility, the Gemara says there, is that the orlos are worth a shavar pruta. A makadosh for milva pruta, David holds, daita pruta. She has in mind, or the chassan has in mind, as the case may be, to be makadosh using the pruta, not using the milva. Therefore, it's a valid kedushin. Shaul, like we say over here, Shaul held differently. He held Daita Milva, and therefore it's not a valid Kedushin. The Gemara discusses other possibilities over there also. Maybe Shaul held they're not worth a Shavar Pruta, and David held they are, whatever. Without getting into that.
Who was the first daughter?
The first daughter was Merav. The second one was Michal. The Gemara brings other opinions over there, including one that the Kedushin to Merav were valid, and in fact it was also for her to marry this other guy. Whatever. When we learn it, we'll learn it in Sanhedrin next year, as the Shem. We'll get into it in detail. Anyway, we see from this that if you're Makadosh with a Milva and a Pruta, which the equivalent is over here, the first two dates, let's say, or the first however many dates that she ate are a Milva, the last one, if it's worth a Pruta, is the Pruta, and we see that that's a valid condition. So we see that that works. Or Shmamina, and the third thing that we can learn from what Rav Ami is saying, is Mois Ba'alma Chozrim, that if you have condition which is not valid, we don't say that he meant to give it as a gift. Rather, we say that it has to be returned. That's why we're calling it a milva. Otherwise, we would say, like you said before, he gave her the first two l'shem kedushin. Fine, even if we're going to say it's not a valid kedushin, fine, he gave it to her as a matana. She shouldn't have to owe it back. The fact that we're not saying that, the fact that we're calling it a milva, implies that it has to be paid back.
Why do we call it a milva and not a matana?
Because if it was a matana, that's the thing. If it was a matana, you wouldn't have to pay it back. We see from this the din that if a man gives kedushin, gives money for kedushin to a woman, where for one reason or another the kedushin cannot be valid, cannot be toifis, as the next discussion that we're going to have now, then it means that we don't consider it a matana, we consider it a pikadon or a milva, whatever, and she's obligated to return it. So this gets into the.
You buy a diamond ring to someone, and that's more than a shava pruta, but.
So you give it to her. Let's say for whatever the kedushin are not toifis.
She has to return.
Then she has that. He's saying that we have to return him. Yeah.
Your case for
all that. Okay. Itmar. Now the Gemara has another discussion. It has another discussion. Our girsa that we have over here is itmar, which means it's a new discussion unrelated to the previous one. Tosfos brings that there is a girsa di itmar with a dalid, which means that this is a continuation of the same discussion, that actually it's not so simple to say mois ba'al machozim, because in fact we have a machlokes on that. But according to the girsa we have, which seems to be Rashi's girsa, it's a new discussion. It seems also, apparently also the Rambam understood also that it's a new discussion, because in the previous discussion he says Mois Chozrim, but in the next discussion that we're going to have over here, he says Mois Batara. So there's reason to differentiate. Tosfos says there may be reason to differentiate between the two cases. The previous case, he thought that the Kedushin would be valid, where it turns out in the end they're not. The next case that we're going to discuss now is one that's clear that there's never going to be any Kedushin over here. So Itmar, Hamakadosh Achoisa. If somebody is Mekadosh his sister, so he gives her money or whatever, he gives her Prota or Shavah Prota, Hareat Mekudeshesli. Well, of course, it's not Toifis because it's an Isur Koris and then Kedushin aren't Toifis. Rav Amar Mois Chozrim. Rav says the money has to be returned. We consider it a Pekodin or a Milva, as the case may be, and she has to return it to him. Or Shmuel Amar Mois Matana. Shmuel says no, the money is considered a gift. Because he says Adam Yadesh and Kedushin Tefes and Bachoisai, because a person knows that Kedushin are not going to be Tefes with a sister, therefore a gum of a Nas and Lashon Pekodin. Therefore, he has in mind to give it to her as a Pekodin.
Because
of what? As a Pekodin. Just I want to deposit this money with you for the time being, but eventually I want it back. Okay. The question is, Lame Lala Shon Pekodin. Fine, according to Rav then, why doesn't he just outright tell her, I want to give you this money to hold on to me? The answer is Savalai Makabla, because he may figure she doesn't want him. I don't want that Achrayus or whatever. So like this, he figures he'll play a trick on her, kind of. He'll give her the money. She'll maybe think that there's something going on over here. Not that it can be Chal. Okay, she knows it can't be Chal, but whatever. She won't be sure what to do with it. But eventually he can get it back from her. Okay.
What's the point of giving her if he's done it? He knows she doesn't want it.
He knows she doesn't want to take that responsibility. So he's giving it to her, and that way, okay, she'll accept it. You know, she won't think that kedushin are going to be chal. Fine, but she won't know what it is exactly. But whatever, she'll have the money in her possession, and eventually he can get it back from her. Maybe she thinks, yeah. But the point is, he thinks that it's begun. With Shmuel Sava Mois Matana, whereas Shmuel holds the money is considered a matana, because Adam Yadesh and Kedushin Tefes and Bachos, a person knows that Kedushin can't be Tefes with a sister, therefore, a gum of a Nosim Lashum Matana. So therefore, he gives it to her as a present. Okay, the question again is, V'nei Malo Lashum Matana. Fine, why doesn't he just straight out tell her, I want to give you this money as a gift? The answer is, Sava Ksifala Milsa, he may figure she'll be embarrassed to take a gift. So he gives it to her in a way that she figures is some way that again she'll be willing to accept it, and later on you know he leaves it in her hands. It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, maybe the Edim also are in on it, right? I mean, they also the Pashtus know that this is brother and sister. I don't know. Okay. The Gemara says Masiv Ravina. So Ravina says I have a sphere. This that you're saying that it's a matana. A Mishnah says in Masechta Chala, Hamafish Chalot Kemach. If somebody takes off Chala while it's still flour before he mixed it with water, only when you mix flour with water, and actually only when you need it with water, only then does it become Chayiv and Chala.
What do you mean when you need it?
When you take kneed with a K.
Oh.
Yes. When you knead the dough, right. That's when it becomes chayiv and chala. If somebody takes off its challah while it's still flour and gives it to the kohen, ene challah, that's not considered valid challah because it wasn't yet chayev, so therefore your dough is still tevel. When you eventually make your dough, it'll still be tevel. The gezel b'yad kohen, and as a matter of fact, it's gezel in the hands of the kohen. If the kohen holds on to that flour and doesn't return it, then he's stolen from the balabot, from the Israel. Now, according to the logic, according to what Shmuel is saying, Mois Matana, then why would you consider it Gezel B'Yad Kohen? Nema, let's argue the same logic. Adam Yedeh Shein Mafrishim Chala Kemach. A person knows that you don't give flour as, and that you don't give challah as dough. That you don't give challah as flour. The pasuk says Reishis Aris Yisaychem. Actually, the Tosfos Rid says it's not so much that maybe people don't know the pasuk, but practically speaking, they see people always give challah as dough. But people know you don't give challah as flour, but not some L'shem Matana, and we should assume that he's giving it to the kohen as a gift. So why is it Gezel B'Yad Kohen? The answer is Shiny Hossam, yes, but it's different in that case of challah. The reason is it's true. If it were just that matter, fine, we could say he's moichel it to the kohen and he gives it to the as a Matana. Problem is the nafik churbim. The problem is that it may lead to a bad situation. It may lead to a situation where somebody is mistakenly eating tevel. Namely, zimnin deisle the koyin pachas mechamish revoyim kemach. What if the koyin has less? What if the koyin himself has some flour but less than chameshus revoyim, five kavim? Rashi gives a long Rashi over here that actually the kavim that we're talking about over here are different than the kavim in the rest of Shas. Usually in Shas, the measurements we use throughout Shas, usually the measurements that we use are called midborios, the measurements that they had when the Jewish people were in the desert. Later on, at some point, you know, when they were in Eretz Yisrael, they enlarged the measurements and they made them into what's called midas Yerushalmios, where six of the old ones became five of the new ones. So they're larger. They're larger by 20%. At some later point, even sometime during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, afterwards, they enlarged them again and made what's called midas Tzipporios. Again, they increased it by 20%. The bottom line is, Rashi gives the whole calculation, but it comes out the five kavim that we're talking about over here are actually what we would usually call throughout Shas 7.2 kavim. The six eggs in a kav. 7.2 of midbarius kavim, right. The six basim, six eggs in a kav, so that comes to 43.2 basim, which is a shiur challah. Mem gimel basim, v'chemish basim. But in terms of midas tziporius, it's five kavim. I guess the reason why the chachamim talk of it in this way is because eventually it came midas tziporius, or the midas that everybody uses on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, a housewife needs to know, a baker needs to know at a glance how much is a shiur challah to have to take challah from. That you can't confuse them with old style measurements. You have to use the present day ones. Anyway, so what if the kohen has less than five kavim of flour? So now he receives this flour from the Yisrael, which the Yisrael thought gave it to him as if it was challah. The Kohen is going to think maybe that the Yisrael gave it to him as the Yisrael taka gave it to him as challah. So in that case, it's challah. It's potter from challah. Because suddenly takna Yisrael. So now he needs it all together, thinking that the whole thing is now, so again, the Kohen had less than five kavim. He had, let's say, four kavim. The Yisrael gave him, let's say, one kav of flour for challah. So now he mixes it all together. He has five kavim, which is the amount to be chayv and challah, but he's going to think, because of any takne yisalte, he's going to think that the dough is now corrected, that proper challah has been taken from it. And now the kohen is going to end up eating this dough or this bread as tevel because challah wasn't taken from it, because this flour that the Yisrael gave him is still chayv and challah, and his own flour is also chayv and challah. I don't know actually why the Gemara. I haven't seen anything why the Gemara doesn't just say more simply the Yisrael himself is going to think that if he gave flour and it was valid challah, he himself is going to think that his dough is nitakin and that he can go and eat it. I don't know.
What's the problem with the kohen now? He got this challah. He accepted it that it was.
He thought that it was. He accepted it as challah. Yes. So he's going to think then, okay, so I have one kav over here, which is chala already. That's obviously potter from chala. I have another four kavim over here. Four kavim is not enough for a shiur chala. I mix it all together. Good. Now I have a nice sized loaf of bread, which as far as I know is potter from chala. Whereas really it's chayiv in chala, because the one kav that he received from the Yisrael is still chayiv in chala. The four kavim that he himself has also, well, by themselves they wouldn't be, but combined all together you have five. So yeah.
Just to take up and eat it by himself.
He himself can eat it, true. He being a Kohen, but yeah.
He's still
yeah.
He's an Amharic. I mean, you shouldn't understand that. I told the Kenyan with the Chachon.
Yeah.
How can he think this way?
Well, I mean, okay. The question is, Va'amrit, didn't you just say Adam Yadei Shein Mafrish and Chala Kamach? Didn't you just say that people know that Chala is not giving us flour? So how is the Kohen going to possibly think that this is valid Chala? The answer is, wait, Yadei Ve'eni Yadei. The Kohen does know, but he doesn't. Namely, Yedei Hashem Mefrish and Chala Kamach. Yes, he knows that people don't give Chala as flour. The Eni Yedei, but what do we mean he don't know? Desavar, he thinks like this. He has a mistaken impression. Why is it, the Kohen says to himself, why is it when people bring me Chala, they always bring it to me as dough? Does it mean it dafka has to be brought as dough? Not necessarily. He thinks, you know why usually people bring challah as dough? Because of my tircha, to save me the tircha of having to make it into dough. But tircha de koyin achilte, fine, I'm willing to be moichel. I'm willing to be moichel on that in this case. So he doesn't realize that the actual flour was not yet chayiv in challah. He thinks that it is, he thinks, okay, this is an exception because I'm willing to be moichel on it. And therefore he thinks that it was valid challah.
Whereas in fact it wasn't, because the reason
why you have to give challah as dough is not to save the koyin the work of making it into dough, but because until it's made into dough, it's not chayiv and challah. Reishis erisi sechem, the pasuk says. That might be the detail the koyin doesn't know. The Gemara asks, "V'te hevit shrumah v'le te'achol ad shi'yotei ale challah makom acher." Fine. Why are we saying that it's gezel b'yad koyin, meaning that he has to return the whole bag of flour to the Yisrael? Why don't we just say it is considered truma in the sense that we'll say that fine, it has the dinim of truma, Zohar can't eat it, etc. Don't return it to the Israel. However, all we have to do is tell the Kohen that you can't eat this until you take out challah on behalf of it from someplace else, meaning you have some other dough or you have some other dough, or Mefarshim talk about this, it has to be some other dough, or it could even be the same dough itself, whatever. But let's say you take out, you have this flour, which was given to you, which it turns out is not challah at all, it's still tevel. As I said, it's still tevel. Once it's made into dough, it'll still be tevel as far as challah. Why don't we just say, fine. Once you mix it with water and it becomes chayiv and challah, you have to take off challah from it. That's all.
Five mokum achem.
That's the thing. Some mafarshim say that it doesn't dafka mean mokum achem, that it could even be from the same mokum, that you could take out a piece from it itself as challah. Other mafarshim give reasons why maybe it dafka has to be mokum achem, because after all, it was given to him the Torah of challah. After all, Mila Tnan, wouldn't it be similar to a case that we learned in, that we learned that in Mishnah and Demai, we learned it in Yubamas, if somebody takes truma from plants that grew in a flower pot with a hole, which is chayiv and truma daraisa, and he gives that on behalf of plants that grew in a flower pot without a hole, which is not chayiv, or at least not chayiv daraisa, truma, it is considered truma. However, you can't eat it. You can't eat that. The Kohen himself can't eat that truma because it's not really truma because it was given on behalf of something which is potter. So the Kohen himself is going to have to take out truma and ma'isa from it from someplace else, or again maybe from it itself. But whatever. The point is, we do consider it truma. We're just going to say that we're just going to say the Kohen himself, before he eats it, is going to have to do something with it to make it no longer tevel. So why don't we say the same thing over here? Let the Kohen keep this flour. Let him take off challah from it, from another batch of dough, or maybe even the same batch of dough, and we're all good. The answer is betray money tois, b'chad money loy tois. The difference is, if you have the case of the flour pot, there's two different kalim involved. So the Kohen can understand. You can make the Kohen understand that, in this case, that one was chayiv and one is potter. Tzayis means he'll listen. He'll listen to you when you chachamim come and tell him that this was, even though you're allowed to keep this, you don't have to return it to the, you don't have to return it to the Yisrael, but you have to take off truma and nicer from it. Fine. He can understand one's a flower pot with a hole, one's without, one's chayiv, one's potter. You can make him understand that.
Whereas here,
b'chadmana loitzoy. If it's all one keli, he received flour as challah, where the Yisrael originally had flour. You tell him all of a sudden that this is not that you tell him all of a sudden, sure, you can keep this, but you have to take challah from it. He's not going to listen to you.
He doesn't see the difference.
Therefore, make him return it to the Yisrael and let the Yisrael store it all over by giving the challah properly as done. Or the Gemara says another possibility. Let's assume maybe the Kohen would be willing to listen even in that case. However, the problem is not the Kohen. The problem is that the owner is going to think that his dough has been proper, that has had challah taken from it properly. And he's going to end up eating it as kettle. If you don't make the Kohen return the flour to him, if you allow the Kohen to keep the flour, then he's going to think, the balabas is going to think, that the dough that I make afterwards from the remaining flour is good. And really it's not, because as long as there's more than a shiur challah in it, the challah has to be taken from it again. Therefore, make the kohen return the flour to him, and that way he'll realize that something's wrong over here and that he has to take challah properly.
Maybe the kohen was not an MR, he gave it to him, now he is giving it like that.
Right, there is actually the Pnei Yeshua, I think it is, asked the question. I mean, what are we talking about here about a Kohen Chover? Then why are we saying Tzoyis or Loit Tzoyis? You know, he's a Chover. He'll listen either way. He'll have to understand the distinction either way. And if he's an Amaretz, then among other things, what are you doing giving him Challah in the first place? You're not supposed to give Challah to a Kohen Amaretz. He leaves it Tzorchiyu. Okay.
So you have to ask him whether he mixed it with water and obviously, it had to come to his mind that he may not have done that.
Well, he received it as flour, so obviously when the challah was taken out, it wasn't yet mixed with water. Yeah,
right.
That's the point. He has to now return it to the Yisrael. The Yisrael may have already made the rest of the batch of dough, fine. But at any rate, he'll either mix this into it, or he'll save it for the next batch, whatever. But the point is, he'll have to know that batch has not had challah taken from it yet. Okay, again, the Gemara says, Va'amart adam yadeh shein mafrishin challah temach. You said before that a person knows that challah is not given as flour. So what makes you think the balabas is going to think that the dough that he makes from this flour is good now, is not tevel? And again, the answer is yadeya ve'en yadeya. Like we said before, he's going to think that he may know that fact, but he may not understand the reason behind it. Yadeya shein mafrishin challah temach. He knows that people don't usually take challah from flour. Any idea, but again, what he doesn't know is the sabar. Again, he thinks time of mayim shem tircha dekoy. And again, the reason you don't give it as flour is because of the koyin tircha dekoy. Kibla alav. The koyin was not willing. And the reason you don't give it as flour, he thinks, is because of the tircha of the koyin. Well,
you find that you could give it just as flour.
Yeah,
right.
But in this case, the koyin accepted it, so obviously it must be good. He won't realize that, therefore, make him get back the flour, and that way he'll realize it. We might ask another possibility. Fine. So we said so far we said the Mishnah tells us that it's gezel b'yad koyin, meaning the koyin has to return it. We went through the possibility that maybe it should be considered truma, but the koyin still has to take truma and ma'aser on it from someplace else. Now let's try a third possibility. Why don't we say v'tehevet truma v'yachzav yitrim? Still, why don't we say that it is considered truma, or in this case challah, but the balabas is going to have to take off truma or challah again? Milotnan, wouldn't it be similar to another case that we also learned in Demai? Mishain and Nakov ala Nakov. For the other way around, if you take truma from stuff that grew in a flower pot without a hole, on behalf of stuff that was grown in a pot with a hole, where here it's been a potter ala chayev, truma v'yachsav yitzrim, then it's considered truma in the sense that the kohen doesn't have to return it, in the sense that a zor can't eat it, but you still have to take off truma again from the right place. The answer is Hokim, we said before, but Shrei Moni Tzoyis, Bechad Mono Loi Tzoyis. Again, we said the difference is between two Kalim and one Kalim. Two Kalim, two different flower pots, you'll understand the distinction and realize they have to take proper truma. One Kali, like this, it was all flour in the same kneading, in the same container, you're not gonna listen. Okay, the Gemara says, V'hotnan, what about a case that we learn in a Mishnah, also that we learn in a Mishnah? That seems to contradict this. A case in the Sechta Trumas. Hatorim Kishrus v'nim tamora. If a person takes truma from a Kishrus, Kishrus is a type of small cucumbers, kirbies, like the kirbies they have in the stores. A person takes a truma from that, v'nim tamora, and it turns out that it turns out that the one he took as truma is bitter. It's not ripe or whatever. Avatiach v'nimta seruach. He took truma from melons, and it turns out that they're spoiled. Truma v'yachsa v'yitrim. What he took is truma, but he has to take truma again. What he took is truma, in other words, in the sense that a zor can't eat it, but he still has to take truma again in order to make it not tevel. So why don't we say the same thing over here?
Why? Because it's not...
The first one that he took off is truma. Because after all, he took it off as truma. But we make him take proper truma take a kishrus that's not bitter, take an avatiach that's not spoiled. So why don't we say the same thing over here? The flour is truma, it is challah, in the sense the kohen keeps it, but you also make him take challah again. The answer is shiny hasan, it's different over there, debidar rice is truma malyan. Because in that case, actually taking a spoiled kishrus or avatiach as truma actually would be valid midar rice. So you can't say that. You can't say it's not truma because the Torah says that it's truma. All the chachamim can do is say the yachs of the yitzvah. Midi Rabbi Loi, based on what Rabbi Loi says. The Amar Rabbi Loi, minayim l'torim min arroa l'yofesh truma se truma. How do we know a person takes truma from something bad on something good, that it's a valid truma? Shenema, the Pasuk says, v'loi siftu olav chet. The Pasuk says to the Levim when they're taking truma smaiser, you should not bear guilt about it. V'harim chem eschel boi, when you take out the good stuff. So you have to ask, you made it kodesh. If when you take out the bad stuff, the spoiled stuff, as truma or meiser, it wouldn't be valid, nesiyas chet lama, then what nesiyas chet would there be? What aveira have you done if it's anyway not considered truma? Mikan l'turim in a ra, l'yafash truma se truma. So from this we learn that, yes, if you take from bad on good, it is valid truma. You're not supposed to do it, and if you do that, you are bearing you have done an aveira, but it's nevertheless valid truma. Midrabanan will make you take truma again. As opposed to the case of the flour and the challah, where flour is b'chlal, not chayev, in challah. So you can't consider it. You can't say that it was valid, challah midar daisa. It wasn't. As opposed to a spoiled avatiach is valid midar daisa. So the bottom line is we don't have any contradiction from this case of the challah kemach. We don't have any contradiction from that to Shmuel, because that was a unique case over there where we say, where we say over there that it's gezel b'yat koyim. You could say that normally a person gives something which he knows is not going to work, he can consider it a matana, like the case of a person being a Kaddish's sister. But in the case of the flower, even if he knows that it's not valid because you're not supposed to give truma as flour, you're not supposed to give challah as flour, because of all of the issues that we just discussed, we say in the end that the koyim has to return it to him. You can't generalize from that back to the case of a Kaddish's sister. And the halacha, the Rambam, in fact, paskin like Shmuel, like that Moish Matanah.